Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, July the 10th, 2009.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
USDA has released its latest supply and demand figures. It rolls the bigger corn and soybean acreage into the ending stocks. What does it mean for farmers and traders? We'll try to find out today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the land-grant university, the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with EFG's Steve Erdman. Our panelists today are Mike Zuzalo of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, Ellen Dearden of AgriView in Morton, Illinois, and Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Let's open today's discussion with this question. Mike Zuzalo, how do you explain USDA's 08-9-110 million bushel soybean carryout?
I think it pretty much boils down to a sub-40 bushel yield, Todd, and it also boils down to continued strong demand from China with the idea that, like the United States, China's crushing margins are starting to suffer. Like the United States and Europe, China and their livestock industry starting to suffer. And I think that what we saw here this past week before the report was not only outside market influence, but after the acreage report came out, I think the trade started to dial down the demand side from the soybean side just to be safe going into the report.
Ellen Dearden?
I thought you'd just call it kind of a magic pencil because it seems to me to get there, they used the 110 million bushel ending stocks and started backwards instead of trying to go forward and reach that point. I think, you know, the residual is just kind of the fudge factor.
And Dan Zwicker.
That's pretty much the way I look at it is 110 is about as low as you can go. We're probably going to find that someplace in here in time in August, early September, probably prior to new crop harvest. So we'll have to see how things play out. I mean, there's a lot of activity that can happen between now and then.
Here, the way the numbers settled in Chicago from the bean pit this week, July soybeans had a high of $12.39, a low at $10.63. Their settlement for the July at 11.28 and a quarter was down $1.14 and 3/4 from last week. And November beans settled at $9.17, down 89. What do the charts look like in your opinion?
They don't look very promising. Basically, when you look at the soybean chart, you can see it's kind of in a difficult environment here. I think a lot of chart people will be I think they kind of view that it's important that this 881 level that we had earlier in the week holds, and we can maybe try to begin some kind of retracement rally from that point.
Ellen, you agree, 881?
I think this 880, 888 level is pretty important on the November bean, but I look at this as a pennant on the pole, and this pole is down, and the flag is an up flag, and that's a bearish formation. So I think that we could very well break this 888 level.
You have a chart point down lower where you think it might go?
Yeah, I think maybe we could get down as low as $8. And I don't know that we're going to do that in the next week or so, but being down 89 cents this week, it's a possibility.
And Mike?
Well, you don't want the August beans to give up here. We'll have July expire on Tuesday, and the August beans are still above their 200-day moving average. That 990, 993 level, that weekly low this past week was right near that 200-day moving average. You've got the Nov beans below the 200-day moving average, August still above it. This week's report to me said and suggested we still have a bull spread that's going to work. But like your first question, I think it goes back to I've heard a lot of hog clients tell me their basis for meal has just crashed this last few weeks. Basis for beans have crashed as well. I mean, I know a lot of the elevators moved from July to November when they bid the old crop, and that had to, you know, bring the basis back or the spread back in and the basis back down some. But I think with the meal basis crashing as well, you don't want to lose that front-end strength. That's the bottom line from the technicals, the way we look at it.
For producers, Ellen, with a crop in the field now that's up and growing, they're on the cusp with the numbers from this week, not the numbers from USDA, but from Chicago, of their crop insurance points. What do they have to pay attention to?
I had some calls just today from guys asking, should I just go ahead and sell all my beans? I can sell them for fall delivery, Ocknov delivery, and still get $9. And this was into a river terminal west of this area. But that basis hadn't fallen apart yet. And so I think there are some situations like that that you can be extremely aggressive about selling. At this stage of the game, we're already to the 60% point having been sold, and I'm pretty comfortable staying there unless we can see this November bean back up around 960, and then I'd add.
So would you be in agreement? Are you going to be an aggressive seller at $9 and above on the cash side if you can find it still?
Well, I don't know if I want to be quite as bearish. I think the bean situation still has a lot of weather to be played out. I think a 43 bushel average on beans might be a little rich given the lateness of the bean crop. Now, I do think bean acres are probably going to go up a little bit as time goes on, but I don't see any big significant jump. But we got a lot of season to play out in beans, so I guess when I take a look at old crop inventory supplies, I take a look at very little competition from South America going into the fall and the need to ensure a large South American crop, I guess I is a little more optimistic maybe that we can maybe get a little better recovery rally as we go down the road.
Mike, Dan reminds us that this year's in the crop now average yield from USDA says a 42.6 or a 43 bushel average national yield. Last year was a 39.6 bushel to the acre average yield. Do you agree that they're just too rich on the number?
The yield number I think isn't determined yet, Todd. I don't think we know yet. I think Dan's point is really well taken about, especially the early bean crop. The Delta bean crop is very, very far behind, and so that might drag down your national yield. And I'm going to play more of the technical mindset and see what the August beans do and the front end beans do. I think when it comes to the November, I still have to, after this report this week, I still have to wonder where the ending stocks for 09 beans are going to shake out, because like Dan said, bigger acres are likely. I think that maybe lower demand is likely because of what we've gone through this last 6 months as far as higher prices. So I wonder if ending stocks aren't on their way up, but maybe some in Chicago may look at this this is one of the top end numbers. I think that's something we have to look at here in the next month or so.
Let's recap those USDA ending stocks as they did come out from the Washington, D.C. office on Friday morning at 7:30 Central Time. They now say soybeans for this year will have an ending stocks of 110. That's the number we started with. Next year's ending stock will be at 250 million bushels by the time we get to the fall of 2010. On the corn side of the ledger, the ending stocks for the current marketing year will be 1.77 billion bushels, according to USDA. Average trade guess was 1.6. And the USDA's June estimate was a 1.6. For next year, USDA says a 1.55 or 1.550 million bushels. That's 1,550 million. compared to their June estimate. And, of course, this one rolls in those extra acres that they put in the June acreage report. The June estimate was a 1.09 billion bushel carryover. In Chicago this week, July corn futures had a high of 358 and three quarters, a low at $3.35, with the settlement price down a quarter cent at 345 and a half. And December futures were 19 and a half cents lower at $3.38. What did you like and not like about the USDA supply-demand report for corn?
Boy, I didn't see that there was a whole lot of good news in that supply-demand report, except for the fact that they left ethanol unchanged. I mean, it just seems to me that we're ratcheting back demand, and these may be our highest demand numbers that we'll see right here for corn.
From an end-user's perspective, do you see, unlike what she's telling us, that demand will drop off, that demand might pick up at the lower levels?
I'm not going to argue too much with USDA's demand numbers, at least at this point.
Okay.
I think the thing that the corn market makes it in a very difficult environment is that you've got the Western Corn Belt, you've got the good to excellent rating levels out there in Nebraska, Iowa, Minnesota in that 82, 83, 84% level. So, and then you take a look at what's happened here in the Eastern Corn Belt over the past 3 to 4 weeks. I think USDA is low on their yield estimate. I think the trade is already beginning to think that we're at least five bushels better. And I've even heard some crop scouts now begin to think that we're going to make national records yet before this thing's over with, and that really changes the complexion of the balance sheet. So that's going to put corn in a much cheaper price level, and I think demand numbers could actually grow from that.
Helen, let's go back to your comment, the demand. This may be some of the best set of demand numbers that we see. Prove that to me, please.
I just think our livestock numbers have really dropped, and I don't see that's going to change very much in the next 6 months' time. We've just got $30 a head losses on hogs. We're not going to be, you know, growing that hog herd. It's just going to continue to just ratcheting lower in the cattle side as well. And look at the poultry. If China comes in here and bans U.S. poultry, we're not going to be having much of a poultry situation in the U.S. at all, except for domestic use. And that's just going to crash all the livestock.
So not much on demand. Are you in the same boat as Dan Zwicker on the actual yield number? It's now set at 153.4. I know it's still early. Last year's yield actually was 153.9.
Yeah, the starting point's probably okay. I don't know that I agree that we're going to go much higher than that, but I don't think we've got a lot of downside.
Mike?
Well, the R-square number from USDA from 1960 to 2008 on that 153 is like 90%. So you can't fight them on that. I mean, they've got a 90% accuracy going for them right now. I will say I think that like last year, because of the problems in the Central Corn Belt and the continued problems south of I-70 that we continue to hear about from our producers, that there's enough damage that we can't have both big acres and big yield. Either harvested acres are going to have to come down or the yield's going to have to be trimmed some. So not to argue Dan's point at all because of what USDA is on track with, but if we do go up in yield, I think we'll have to bring our harvested acres down. And Ellen's point, I think demand on corn, it gets hit with the wheat. You know, if one thing came out at us after this Friday's report was wheat still is a competitor with corn in terms of excess supply, and that makes it very, very hard for us. I think that what we're going to have to work from at this point, if you're a producer, is work from a standpoint that if wheat can't bottom and beans can't show any more flashes here on good weather, then we probably will go ahead in Chicago and price in bigger yield, big acres, and take that corn down another level. But at that point, I'll be an aggressive buyer and recommend aggressive buying just from a standpoint of protecting crop insurance premium.
On Friday, USDA pegged average season's cash prices, and I want to give both last year's and this year. So the current marketing year, the one we have, the old crop, they've narrowed down to just a 20-cent range from 395 to 415. They left the top end at 415 for the new crop and dropped the bottom end to 335, but of course the mid-range is well above where we're trading now. You think they've got this range right?
Well, it depends upon what happens in weather, I think. You know, the size of the crop is going to have a lot to say with it. But from a technical perspective, I think it's a must that this corn market regroups and closes this chart gap that was left earlier in the week in this 53 to 56 area. If not, your chart people is going to be using that as a potential measuring gap that could send prices a whole lot cheaper than what USDA is projecting.
Are you feeling as bearish to the corn market as – and I don't want to categorize you as bearish to the bean market. You can do that yourself if you'd like. But are you feeling that much downward pressure in the corn too?
I don't think we do have a whole lot of downside. I think December corn's 302 contract low is going to hold.
Mike?
We're at an average price of 355 for new crop corn, Todd. So we're, what, 50 cents below that on new crop. So we're not cash sellers here. We're put buyers if those outside markets get weaker.
Downside?
I'll pass on that.
Okay, you can pass. Here's some of the rest of the numbers as they finished up in Chicago on this week. And the wheat pit, the July had a high of 501 and a low at 483.5, a settlement price at 491.75, 8.5 lower. July of next year at 584, settled 10.75 lower. July oats at 204, 11.5 lower. The August live cattle an 84.90 top at a bottom at 82.95, down a buck 40 at 83.47.5. And the August feeders at 102.92.5, finished 52.5 cents lower. July lean hogs for the week, a 61.60 top, bottom at 58.35, with a settlement price up 17.5 cents at $60.15.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. It was a cool and mostly quiet first full week of July across Illinois. After a wet Independence Day, a ridge of high pressure brought cooler weather to most of the state. Temperatures this week averaged 5 to 7 degrees below normal, although it did start to warm up by the end of the week. Several days of dry weather followed up to 2 inches of rain across much of Illinois on the 4th of July. An upper level disturbance crossing from northwest to southeast in Illinois on Wednesday and Wednesday night brought some locally heavy rain to a broad swath from the Quad Cities through central Illinois to southeastern Illinois. Amounts in excess of 2 inches were reported in some locations, with more than 2.5 inches in Jasper County. The weather over the next week or more is likely to be dominated by northwest flow aloft across Illinois and the eastern Midwest. This will bring a chance for showers and thunderstorms to much of the state, at least for the first half of next week. A frontal system could sag south through Illinois at midweek and bring a couple of days of fair weather. Temperatures next week will likely continue to be near to slightly below normal. The exception to this may be in southwestern Illinois, where temperatures could be quite a bit warmer along and south of the frontal boundary. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to the Commodity Week. This was produced on Friday, July the 10th. Our panelists in studio today are Ellen Dearden of AgReview out of Morton, Illinois, Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, and Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities from Lafayette, Indiana. Joining us now from his Chicago office is Steve Erdman of EFG. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Hi, Todd. Hi, guys. How you doing?
What was the feeling on Friday morning in Chicago after the USDA released its numbers?
Oh, I don't think that there were any big shocks. I think the biggest thing I heard this morning were people questioning the livestock numbers, that they were that big and that disappearance was what it was because of the livestock numbers. But all in all, I thought it was, the reaction was pretty blasé. I think people are more focused on the crop in the ground and how dramatically it's improved in the last 3 weeks.
What's your thinking as far as downside price risk in here, Steve, on the corn market after you took a look at this morning's numbers?
Well, I gauge different support levels more from a technical standpoint than fundamentally. I mean, the supplies are still growing, as evidenced by the ending stocks, both in the U.S. and the world ending stocks. But I think from the weekly charts, I think you've got support at 305 to 310, and if we take that out, we'll probably look at 290 and then eventually 265.
Wow. I think that the producer here in the country has just this week realized that corn prices can go down after we've dropped more than a buck. How about that ending stocks number in beans? Does anybody buy that, or are we going to continue to see bull spreading here as the July goes off Tuesday, as August comes on as the lead month?
I think the attitude here is that the August contract, once July is gone, I think Mike said it earlier in the show that once the July contract has expired on Tuesday, that August will pick up the mantle. And I think the situation, if they get the meal cleaned up in the country, then I think you can see the meal basis come back and the demand for meal come back, and subsequently August beans will start to firm. People got a lot of coverage, I think, early when they were, it's kind of like the wheat market a couple of years ago when they were fearful that we were going to run out of soybeans. I think everybody accelerated their coverage, and that's why you saw the dramatic move in the July-November bean spread. It's very similar to 2004.
Steve, taking a look at the outside markets, we had Carl Levin scream and kick about a week or two ago about the speculation and derivatives, and lo and behold, CFTC came out. So they're going to start new legislation, start really ramping it up by this fall on trying to crack down on any derivatives with finite supply. They're going to look at OTC derivatives as well. And then we started talking about a second stimulus package out of Washington, and it seemed like it really kind of cracked open the outside markets this week. Your mindset in terms of the people you talk to in the fund community, are the index funds, CTAs, are they taking notice of this? Are they going to pull the plug this third quarter and go to the sidelines? What's your view on that one?
I don't know that they'll pull the plug, Michael, but I think they are very much taking notice of it. I think their salad days are over. I mean, they came into our marketplace. They got hedge exemptions, purportedly for hedging some of their exposure in some of the energy markets and what have you. But I think they've stumbled into our markets like a bull in a china shop with a tremendous amount of money, and I think all of us have seen the result of that, $145 to $150 oil, and, you know, $750 to $8 corn, $25 Minneapolis wheat. So I think, by and large, people aren't real happy ever to see regulation come in, and I think there's a certain sense in Chicago that if we overdo this regulation, that it's just going to push business offshore, that some other exchange will pick up the contracts that the government's trying to regulate. But by and large, I think people aren't surprised by it. And I think the mood about the economy is exactly what you just said, that everybody's realizing that if they're talking about a second stimulus, then we do need something. This market doesn't have green shoots like everybody's been saying that it does, or they aren't healthy enough to sustain themselves.
Steve, what recommendations would you have for a farmer that still has some cash corn in his bin?
Well, I think they need to be extremely mindful of the basis, Dan. The basis has rallied. I think SIF basis was up, offered 14 cents higher week to week. The basis has just been screaming. So, I mean, I think that's the biggest surprise that anybody's realized. Everybody thought that we had so much old crop corn in the pipeline that we'd never have to see the basis rally the way it has. But obviously the basis is bearing the brunt of this flat price break, and the farmers are very stubborn sellers of cash. I would do my utmost to focus on the basis right now and try to make the best cash sale you can. I really think that we're trying to get a little bit oversold in the short term. We may see a bounce, but I don't really think the market can do much better than 15, 20 cents on the upside, and I don't even expect that given the status quo. The crop just keeps getting bigger day by day.
So a 15 or a 20 cent bounce would take us right back to that December corn gap, wouldn't it?
Yes. And I think if you look at a weekly chart and you see that we still left the island, in my opinion. When we rallied the corn market back up to 450 basis of July contract, we really, it's the bearish formation that we put in from the subsequent highs at 750 is still intact. So, I mean, to me, if you flip that head and shoulders over on a weekly chart, it points down to 250 to 265. And I don't like it any better than anybody else because I'm a farm boy too. But the reality of the situation is, as I said, is the crop keeps getting bigger and our supplies and ending stocks keep getting larger.
Steve, Dan had an earlier point about the yield and how Chicago's probably going to trade bigger yields, and we've heard the same thing. Do you guys have any number right now? Are they in the high 150s, low 160, or what could at this current price level at the end of the week, where do you think they're trading?
Mike, I've heard some pretty wild guesstimations on yield and numbers. I mean, I've heard from more than one person 2 billion bushels being touted as ending stocks, and that's, what, 450 million more than we saw this morning. So the market is the market mindset, the Chicago mindset, I'd say is pretty bearish right now, given the continued talk we hear from the Western Corn Belt and how tremendous a crop is in Western Iowa and Nebraska and into South Dakota even, that they haven't even really had to turn their irrigation systems on. So I think people are trying to calculate right now the diminished crop in Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio, and how that's going to be impacted by the good crops in the Western Corn Belt.
Well, if this is all the case, and they're considering probably a national yield that would be a record breaker, do you believe it?
I have to. I mean, it's going right now, Todd. If the only thing, this is a very prolonged planting season. I would imagine, you guys can tell better than I can, but I would imagine we're going to be seeing corn pollinate at least into the first week of August because of how delayed things were. But we've turned this crop around in a tremendous fashion in the last 3 weeks. And I know there are holes out there, and I know there's thin stands, and I know these hybrids need heavy populations to yield like they have yielded in the past. But right now, I mean, everything that we're looking at day to day, week to week, is suggesting that the supply that's coming online is growing. So I have to believe it.
And so would it be 160 or better?
I wouldn't even hazard to put a number on it. I have no idea. I mean, I think every year the American farmer amazes me with their ability to produce a crop. I mean, every single year. If you had asked me, I've been doing this for 29 years, and if you had asked me 5 or 10 years ago that we'd be having these kind of yields in corn, national average yields, I'd have told you were crazy. So I guess I have to believe what's out there.
Steve, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Steve Birdman is with EFG. Now time for a final word from our folks in studio, Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities.
Well, after you get done drinking real hard after this show, maybe after you sober up, you can take a look at and see if the Dease corn goes below 325. We would not recommend any cash sales. We'd instead stay with the puts, and in about 20 days, we're going to turn around and buy some calls to protect crop insurance.
Ellen Dearden of AgReview.
The big lows for the year are going to come pre-harvest, and I would anticipate we'll have our major lows during the month of August in both corn and beans.
And Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group.
Other than this is a silly season, it's going to be fashionable now to see how bearish you can be on both corn and soybeans, just as in the spring it's kind of, you know, fashionable how bullish you can be. So take that, and market's not going to go straight down all the time. We're going to have some ups and downs in it.
And that wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. Something to keep in mind, you can always access Commodity Week and other analysis throughout the week on demand on your computer. Our site on the web is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find Commodity Week, weekly analysis, cash grain reports, weather, and feature interviews with agricultural newsmakers. Have a good week, if you can. I'm Todd Gleason.